So once you've spotted that special someone, there's always that agonising uncertainty over whether they might feel the same way. So can science help you? Nathan Pipitone from Adams State University, Colorado, studies the giveaway signals that indicate romantic interest. So first of all, when people are actually sizing each other up, looking at the physical side of things, what actually are we attracted to and by?
A lot of our mate attraction seems to come from the visual domain. So we're looking at, for example, characteristic features of males. We're looking at stature. We're looking at muscularity. We're looking at confidence types of behaviors and so on and so forth. But we're not all visual creatures. And so we actually use all of our senses when it comes to in-person mate assessment. So not only the visual domain, but in the auditory domain, which is the focus of my work, and even the olfactory domain, how somebody smells, and even, surprisingly, the gustatory domain. A colleague of mine has showed that kissing behavior conveys a lot of underlying biological information to one another.
Well, we learned on the program last week that a kiss also conveys something in the region of 80 million different microbes per 5-second intimate encounter.
Exactly. And some of those microbes are conveying good information. Some of those microbes are conveying some bad information. So lots of biological transmission, if you will, in a kiss.
And all this gets integrated in your brain, forming an opinion of that person and whether or not you like them. Tell me more about the sound side of things then.
Some of my work has shown that women that speak higher in pitch, and we've done this in a natural fertility population, they actually produce more children and grandchildren. And so fundamental frequency seems to be one of the most important vocal acoustics that allows us to assess good mates from bad ones.
Is that biologically plausible? Why should a woman who is more fecund, more fertile, have a higher pitch to her voice than one who's less likely to bear offspring? Is it just because someone who's less likely to bear offspring with a low-pitched voice is because they look more masculine and therefore are less attractive, so they get actually fewer partners?
Well, in terms of females, we think it's due to how estrogen not only shapes the female voice, but also is related to female fertility. And so women speaking at a higher pitched voice, we think that this is an indicator of trait estrogen levels. And so not only does estrogen, a very important component in reproduction, but it's also shaping the larynx and it's shaping how women are speaking as well. And so this is why we think there's this systematic correlation between pitch and fertility.
Over the course of a month, a woman's menstrual cycle means that her hormone levels do wax and wane, estrogen foremost among them, peaking in the middle of the cycle around day 14, when you are, on average, most likely to conceive if you have sex then. So does this mean that a woman's voice changes across the month then, and perhaps the signal about when you're most fertile coincides with that high estrogen peak?
This is precisely what we think is going on. And so when we look at how a woman produces speech across the menstrual cycle, we've been able to document a systematic change in the level of attractiveness attributed to women that are naturally cycling. If we record the voice from the same females at different points of the menstrual cycle and then play back those voices to independent raters that haven't seen them, their voices recorded at high fertility are rated as more attractive compared to voices recorded at low fertility. And it's an overall subtle effect, but it's a very systematic shift that we've been able to pick up on.
Can you give us some samples of what it sounds like in the, let's say, low fertile state versus the high fertile state?
So in this voice sample, you hear a voice recording of a woman counting from 1 to 5, and this is the low fertility recording.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
In another recording, you'll hear the same woman counting from 1 to 5, but the only difference is that this was recorded at a time of high fertility.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Now, they do actually sound a bit different. And there's no way that the woman just talks like that on one occasion and the other way on another occasion. This is a consistent finding, is it, that she sounds more high-pitched on the more fertile situation?
Well, what's interesting, so between individuals, pitch makes a difference. And so as one woman speaks, we have compared that recording in terms of attractiveness to another woman speaking, pitch seems to make a difference. But within the same individual, one study has found that pitch does systematically change, but there's been several other findings that haven't been able to replicate that. And so we can't just boil down voice attractiveness across the menstrual cycle to voice pitch. There's a host of acoustics that are probably changing in systematic ways. What's interesting is that we don't need the acoustic to find the effect, the human brain almost instantaneously picks up on this slight attractiveness difference. So we still have a lot of work to do in this area in terms of the proximate vocal acoustics actually affecting voice attractiveness.
And a group of people rated these voices according to their attractiveness without actually seeing the person speaking. So they weren't being biased by what that individual looked like, purely by what they could hear.
Exactly. It was just by the sole sound of their voice. And so our work has shown that just by speaking to other individuals, the sound of your voice conveys a host of biologically relevant information that correlates with attractiveness indices in the visual domain. And so just by using the sound of somebody's voice, you can pick up a lot of information related to whether you're going to be attracted to that person.
Now, what about individuals who are using oral contraceptive pills, for example, which effectively fool your body into believing it's permanently pregnant, the result being that you just don't ovulate and you don't have this big flux in hormones with a surge in the middle of the cycle? Do those individuals not show this behavior then? One would predict that they wouldn't.
Precisely. And so with all of our research, we always conduct a control group of women. We record their voices at different times of the menstrual cycle, but then they are using hormonal contraceptive. And so we look at voice attractiveness differences at quote unquote high fertility times in these women compared to low fertility times. And we haven't been able to find anything with women using hormonal contraceptive. So using hormonal birth control seems to truncate this attractiveness response across the menstrual cycle.
Does that in turn then mean that there's the possibility that if someone mates and dates while they're taking the oral contraceptive pill, that subsequently were they to stop the pill, they could be in for a disappointment?
Exactly. That's a really interesting implication. And so looking at women that use hormonal contraceptives, they seem to prefer less masculine types of characteristics of men. So they prefer more feminine male traits. And these are in the behavioral domain and in the physical domain. So not as much muscle mass, not as rogue or impulsive. These are characteristics that naturally cycling females tend to like more than women using hormonal contraceptives. So this is interesting for monogamous pair bonds. If women are using a hormonal birth control and they found a mate and then they want to start a family someday and they decide to go off of the pill or whatever they're using, they might find that their mate isn't what they thought they were. So this is really interesting to see how hormonal birth control is affecting relationships throughout the world.
Thank you very much. That's Nathan Pipitone.